The story Dr. Watson has called The Adventure of the Bruce Partington Twins.
In the third week of November, in the year 1895, a dense yellow fog settled down upon London. From the Monday to the Thursday, I doubt whether it was possible from our windows in Baker Street to see the opposite houses. The first days, Holmes spent his time cross-indexing his huge books of references on old crime. But when the fourth day, we saw from our breakfast the heavy brown swirl still drifting past us and condensing in oily drops upon the window panes, my comrade's impatient, active nature could endure this drab existence no longer. He paced restlessly about our sitting room in a fever of suppressed energy, biting his nails, tapping on the furniture, chafing against inaction.
Nothing of interest in the paper, Watson. No interesting crimes.
No, Holmes, not that I found. Just the ordinary, commonplace things.
The London criminal is certainly a dull fellow. There, Watson, look out this window. See how the figures loom up, are dimly seen, then blend once more into the fog. The thief or the murderer could roam London on...
There have been numerous petty thefts.
Oh, Watson, this great and somber stage is set for something more worthy than this. It is fortunate for this community that I am not a criminal.
It is indeed.
It is well that they don't have days of fog in the Latin countries, the countries of assassination. Ah, yes, Mrs. Hudson, have you something there that allows to break on dead monotony?
Well, I'm just hungry.
Oh, thank you, let me see. Well, what next, Watson? My brother Mycroft is coming round.
Well, why not?
Why not? Well, it's as if you met a tram car coming down a country lane. Mycroft has his rails and he runs on them. His Pall Mall Lodging, the Diogenes Club, Whitehall. That's his cycle. What upheaval can possibly have derailed him?
What does the telegram say?
It reads, must see you over Cadogan West. Coming at once, Mycroft. The name Cadogan West means nothing to me, but that Mycroft should break out in this erratic fashion. A planet might as well have left his orbit. By the way, Watson, do you know what Mycroft is?
He told me once that he had some small office under the British government.
You're right in thinking he's under the British government. You would also be right in the sense if you said that occasionally he is the British government.
Well, here, Holmes.
I thought I might surprise you. Mycroft draws £450 a year. Remains a subordinate, has no ambitions of any kind, will receive neither honor nor title, but remains the most indispensable man in the country.
But how?
Well, his position is unique. There's never been anything like it before, nor will there be again. He has the tidiest and most orderly brain, with the greatest capacity for storing facts of any man living. The same great powers which I have turned to deduction of crime, he has used for this particular business. The conclusions of every department are passed to him, and he is the central exchange, the clearinghouse, which makes out the balance. All men are specialists, but his specialism is omniscience. Now, suppose the minister needs information on a point which involves the Navy, India, Canada, and the Binatanic question. Only Mycroft can focus on them all and say how each factor would affect the other. He's made himself an essential. In that great brain, everything is pigeonholed and can be handed out at an instant. Again and again, his word has decided the national policy. But why is he coming here? Jupiter descending? What on earth can it mean? Who is Cunningham West? And what is he to Mycroft?
Wait a minute. I remember something. I remember reading something in the newspaper. Yes, here it is. A Cadogan West, a young man, was found dead on the underground Tuesday morning.
Really? Well, this must be serious, Watson. A death which has caused my brother to alter his habits can be no ordinary one. Yet the case was featureless, as I remember it. The young man had apparently fallen out of a train and killed himself. No robbery, and apparently no violence. Is that not so?
There's been an inquest, and a good many fresh facts have come out. The man's name was Arthur Cadogan West. He was 27, unmarried, and a clerk at Woolwich Arsenal.
The military arsenal. Government employee. Behold, the link with Father Mycroft.
He left Woolwich suddenly on Monday night. He was last seen by his fiancée, Miss Violet Westbury, whom he left abruptly in the fog at 7:30 that evening. There was no quarrel, and he could give no notice for his actions. His dead body was found by a place layer named Mason just outside Oldgate Station on the underground.
When?
He was found at 6 on Tuesday morning. He was lying wide of the rails on the left hand of the track as one goes eastward, close to the station where the rails come out of the tunnel. His head was badly crushed, to the fore, perhaps. Mm. Actually, the body had to fall from the train. Had it been carried into the station from the street, the ticket collector would have seen it. He was always on duty.
Very good. The case is definite enough. A man, dead or alive, either fell or was pushed from the train. Continue.
Many lines come in on the tracks next to which he was found. Mm-hmm. Some metropolitan and some from outlying junctions. What train he was riding and at what point he entered it are impossible to determine.
Well, his ticket would show that.
There was no ticket in his pocket.
No ticket? Give me Watson, according to my experience, it is impossible to reach the platform of a metropolitan train without exhibiting a ticket. Was it taken from him? Did he drop it? Point is of curious interest. No sign of robbery, you say,
Apparently not. His wallet contained £2.15 and a checkbook on the Woolwich branch of the Capital and County Bank. But that's how his identity was established. We also had two dress circle tickets to the Woolwich Theater, later for that very evening. Also, a small packet of technical papers.
Ah, there we have it at last, Watson. British government, Woolwich Arsenal, technical papers, Brother Mycroft. The chain is complete. Ah, but here he comes, if I'm not mistaken, to speak for himself. Hello, Mycroft. And look who he's brought with him, Watson. Our old friend, Inspector Lestrade. Do sit down, both of you. Some breakfast.
A most annoying business, Sherlock. I extremely dislike offering my habits, but the powers that be would take no denial. I have never seen the Prime Minister so upset. As to the Admiralty, it is buzzing like an overturned beehive. Have you read up on the case?
Yes, we've just done so. What were the technical papers?
Ah, there's the point. Unfortunately, it has not come out. The press would go wild if it did. The papers which this wretched youth had in his pocket were the plans of the Bruce Partington submarine.
Oh.
Surely you've heard of that.
No, only the name.
I thought everyone had heard of it. Its importance can hardly be exaggerated. It has been the most jealously guarded of all government secrets. You may take it from me that naval warfare becomes impossible with this submarine. Every effort and a large sum of money has been expended to keep the invention a secret. The plan, which are exceedingly intricate, comprising some 30 different patents and kept in an elaborate safe in a confidential office adjoining the arsenal. Under no conceivable circumstance were the plans to be taken from that office, not even for the chief naval architect himself. And yet here we find them, in the pockets of a dead junior clerk, in the heart of London. And from an official point of view, it's simply awful.
But you have recovered the plans.
No, Sherlock, no. That's the thing. We have not. 10 papers were taken from Woolwich. There are 7 in the pockets of Cadogan West. The 3 most essential are gone. Stolen. Vanished. You must drop everything, Sherlock. Never mind your usual petty police court puzzles. Do a service for your country.
Why do you not solve it yourself, Mycroft? You can see as far as I am.
Possibly, Sherlock, possibly. But to run here, run there, to cross-question railway guards lie on my face with a lens through my eye. It is not my métier. No, you're the one man who can clear the matter up. If you have a fancy to see your name on the next honors list...
My dear brother, I play the game for the game's own sake. But I shall be very pleased to look into the problem with you. Some more facts, please.
Certainly. The actual official whose decorations and titles would fill those 2 lines in any reference book, and a man whose patriotism is above suspicion, he is one of 2 men who have a key of the safe. Sir James left for London about 3 o'clock on that day, taking his key with him. He was at the house of Admiral Sinclair at Berkeley Square during the whole of that evening.
Has that fact been verified?
Yes. His brother, Colonel Valentine Walker, has testified to his departure from Woolwich, and Admiral Sinclair to his arrival in London, and so Sir James is no longer a direct factor in this problem.
Who was the other man with the key?
The senior clerk at Bradford, Mr. Sidney Johnson. A morose man and popular with his colleagues. But a hard worker with an excellent record. According to his own account, which could only be corroborated by his wife, he was at home all evening, the key on his watch chain and all that.
Tell us about Cadogan West.
10 years in the service. A good worker. There was the reputation of being hot-headed and impetuous. We're busting against him. Duties brought him into daily personal contact with the plans, you know.
Who locked up the plans that night?
The senior clerk, Sidney Johnson.
Well, as part of the plans well found on Cadogan West, it seems perfectly clear it was he who carried them away. The obvious motive would be to sell them. The plans are easily worth several £1,000. But to take the papers, he needed a false key.
Several false keys. He had to open the building and the room.
He took the plans to London, intending, no doubt, to have them back in the safe next morning, before they were missed. While in London on this treasonable mission, he met his end.
How?
On his way back to Woolwich, he was killed and thrown off the train.
But Aldgate, where he was crowded considerably past London Bridge Station, which would be his line for Woolwich.
Many circumstances could be imagined under which he would pass under London Bridge. He was determined someone was in his carriage. A discussion may have led to violence, or possibly he might have tried to leave the carriage between stations and fell to his death. In a thick fog, nothing would be seen.
But consider, Sherlock, how much did you leave untouched? If he did have an appointment in London with, say, a foreign agent, why did he have 2 tickets for the theater in Woolwich, escort his fiancée halfway there, and then suddenly disappear?
I think that might be a blind, Mr. Holmes.
A very singular blind, Lestrade.
Agreed, but let us suppose he's reached London and seen the foreign agent. He must bring back the papers before morning, or the loss will be discovered. He took away 10. Only 7 were in his pocket. What became of the other 3? And also, if he sold the plans, where was the money? not in his pocket.
Well, that seems perfectly clear to me. He saw the agent. They don't agree at the price. He starts home again, and the agent goes with him. On the train, he kills him, takes the three most important parts of the plan, and throws the body off.
And the ticket?
The agent took it from his pocket. The ticket would have shown which station was nearest the agent's house.
Good, Lestrade. Very good. Your theory holds together. By this time, the Bruce Partington plans are probably already on the continent.
You must act, Holmes. It must not yet be too late. Go to the scene of the crime. See the people concerned. Leave no stone unturned. In all your career, you've never had a greater chance to serve your country.
Well, then come, Watson. And you too, Lestrade. Stay with us with your company for an hour or two. We shall begin our investigation with a visit to the tracks of Aldgate Station.
Mind the trains, Mr. Holmes. They switched by very quickly. Here's where the young man's body was found. It could only have fallen from the trains who have been in this spot.
Have the train canopies been examined for signs of violence? Or have the train door left open?
Nothing was found. Not even a ticket. There's only one piece of news. A passenger who passed Aldgate Station as an ordinary metropolitan train, 11:40 Monday night, said he heard a very heavy thud, like a body hitting the line, just before the train reached the station. But because of the fog... Mr. Holmes, what's wrong?
The point. The intersection there by the tunnel just beyond the station. Aldgate is a junction. Therefore, it has a network of intersections. I suppose there are no great number of intersections on a local line like this.
No, there are very few.
Hmm. And a curve, too. Point. The curve. By Jove!
What is it, Mr. Holmes? Have you a clue?
An idea. An indication. Tell me, I see no signs of bleeding, yet the newspaper account said that there was a considerable wound.
The bone was crushed, but there was no great external injury.
One would have expected some bleeding. Would it be possible for me to examine the train which contained the passenger who heard the thud and the fall in the fog?
I fear not, Mr. Holmes. The train has been broken up by now, and the carriages redistributed. But I can assure you every carriage was carefully inspected. I thought of that myself.
No doubt. As it happens, it was not the carriages which I determined to examine. Come, Watson. We've done all we can here. Our investigation must carry us now to Woolwich. And I believe we can take the very train pulling in now. Goodbye, Lestrade. One of those directions, change at London Bridge Station for the Woolwich line. Come, we must hurry, Watson. We certainly owe Brother Mycroft thanks for having introduced us to what promises to be a really very remarkable case.
I'm still completely in the...
Which may lead us there. The young man met his death elsewhere, and his body was on the roof of a carriage.
On the roof?
Remarkable, is it not? But consider the facts. The body is found at the very point where the train pitches and sways as it comes around the curve and over the intersection rails. Isn't that a place where an object on the roof might fall off? Also, consider the blood. Naturally, there would be no bleeding on the line if the body had bled elsewhere.
That would explain the absence of a ticket, too.
Exactly. He was not carrying a ticket because he was not inside the train.
And yet, we're still as far as ever from unraveling the mystery of his death. Indeed, it's not become simpler, it's become stranger.
Perhaps. Quite a few afternoon calls to make when we reach Woolwich. I think that the eminent Sir James Walter claims our first attention.
The home of Sir James Walter was a fine villa with green lawns stretching down to the Thames. As he reached it, the fog was lifting and a thin, watery sunshine was breaking through. We were horrified to learn, however, that Sir James had died that very morning. A distraught younger brother, Colonel Valentine Walter, met us.
It was a horrible scandal, Mr. Holmes. My brother was always so proud of the efficiency of his department. It broke his heart. It was a crushing blow.
I had hoped he might have helped us clear the matter up.
I assure you it is all a mystery to him as it is to you and all of us. He had already put all his knowledge at the disposal of the police. Naturally, he had no doubt that Cadogan West was guilty, but the rest was inconceivable.
You cannot throw any new light on the affair?
I know nothing save what I have read or heard. And now, Mr. Holmes, I must ask you to end this interview. We are all still very much disturbed.
Mrs. West is still in shock over her son's death, and it's seeing no one. But perhaps I can answer your questions, Mr. Holmes. I am Violet Westbury, Cadogan's fiancée.
And the last person to see Cadogan West on that fatal night.
I cannot explain it, Mr. Holmes. I have not shut an eye since the tragedy. Thinking, 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 day and night. Arthur was the most chivalrous, patriotic man on earth. He would have cut his right hand off before he'd sell a state secret confided to his care. It's absurd, impossible, preposterous to anyone who knew him.
Was he in any need of money?
No. His needs were simple and his salary ample. He had saved a few £100. We were to marry in the new year.
No signs of mental excitement? Come with Miss Bray. We must be very frank.
Yes. I had a feeling that there was something on his mind.
For a long time?
Only the last week or so. He was worried. Once, I pressed him about it, and he said it was too serious to speak about, even to me. He said nothing more.
Go on, Miss Westbury. Even if it seems to be against him, do go on.
I really have nothing more to tell. One evening, he mentioned that he was doing secret work, and that, no doubt, foreign spies would pay a good deal to have it.
This is serious. Anything else?
He said we were slack about such matters, that it would be easy for a traitor to get the plans.
Now, tell us about last evening.
We were to go to the theater. The fog was so thick that a cab was useless. We walked, and our way took us close to his office by the arsenal. Suddenly, he darted away into the fog.
Without a word?
He gave an exclamation. That was all. I waited, but he never returned. Then I walked home. About 12 o'clock the next day, we heard the terrible news. Oh, Mr. Holmes, if he could only save his honor. Only that. It meant so much to him.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I'm Sidney Johnson, the senior clerk. This is all a bad business, very bad. Have you heard of the death of the chief?
We left the home of Sir James Walter earlier this afternoon.
Poor Sir James. The chief dead, Cadogan West dead, our papers stolen. And yet, only last Monday, we were as efficient an office as any in the government service. Good God, it's dreadful to think of, that West, of all people, should have done such a thing.
You were sure of his guilt, then?
I can see no other way out of it. I suppose he needed the money for his upcoming marriage. And yet, I would have trusted him as I trust myself.
To get to the papers that night, Cadogan West would have needed three keys, would he not?
Yes, sir, three keys. To the outer door, to the office, to the safe.
Only Sir James and you had those keys.
I had no keys to the doors, only to the safe.
And Sir James took his keys with him when he went to London earlier that day.
So he said. And my keys never left my person.
It follows that West had a duplicate. Yet none was found on his body. But one more point. If someone in this office wanted to sell the plans, wouldn't it be simpler to copy the plans rather than take the originals?
I suppose so. It would take considerable technical knowledge.
And Cadogan West had this technical knowledge?
No doubt. But please don't drag into the matter, Mr. Holmes. Of what use is this speculation? The plans were found on him.
Exactly. And yet there are three papers still missing. They are, as I understand, the vital ones. Tell me, could someone holding these three papers, but without the other seven, construct the Bruce Partington submarine?
So I reported to the Admiralty. But after looking at the drawings, I'm not so sure. The double valves with the automatic self-adjusting slots are in one of the plans that were returned. Of course, they might soon get over that difficulty.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. You've been most helpful. Now, with your permission, I think we'd like to take a stroll around the arsenal. I would like to, if I may, examine all the doors and windows. Look, Watson, this laurel bush outside the window. See, the branches have been twisted and snapped. Pity there are no more footprints.
Someone must have been standing here, peering inside the window.
And yet, Watson, at night, these iron shutters would be closed, and it would be impossible to see anything.
Not really, Holmes. See, they're not quite shut all the way. One can look through the slit in the center.
You're right. Good for you, Watson. Now let us do some exploring at the Woolwich train station. The station master informs me he sold Cadogan West a ticket to London at 8:15 Monday night. He's alone and so shaky and agitated he could hardly pick up his change.
8:15? And he left his fiancée by the arsenal about 7:30.
We can do nothing further here, Watson. Let us return home to Baker Street and reconstruct.
That's good to be Warren's on fire again, Anne. Even though the fog seems to have lifted today, there's still a damp chill in the air.
Listen, there are numerous small fry spies, but the only men who would handle so big an affair are Adolph Meyer of 13 Great George Street in Westminster, Louis Lautier of Camden Mansions in Notting Hill, and Hugo Oberstein of 13 Garfield Gardens in Kensington. Oberstein was known to be in town on Monday, but he is now reported as having left.
Well, that doesn't seem to cause very much, does it?
On the contrary. Things are turning a little in our direction at last. Yes, hand me that big map of London, will you? Thank you, Watson. Yes, just as I thought.
Thomas, what is it?
Why, Watson, I do honestly believe that we're going to pull it off after all. I'm going out now for a bit, for a short reconnaissance. Stay here, Watson, but be on tap. I may have need of you later.
Shortly after 9 that evening, a messenger came with a note from home. He was dining at Goldini's restaurant in Gloucester Road, Kensington, and I should join him. Moreover, I should bring him a jenny, a dark lantern, a chisel, and a revolver. A nice equipment for a respectable citizen to carry with him through the foggy street. I drove there at once and found my friend at a little round table near the door of a garish Italian restaurant.
man. You have something to eat?
You join me for a coffee in Toronto. Now, try one of the Fiat's cigars. They're a lot less poisonous than one would expect. Have you the tools?
Here, under my overcoat. But really,
excitement, excitement. Excellent. Let me give you a short sketch of my plans, Watson. First, it must be evident that the young man's body was placed on the roof of the train. Not dropped, but placed, as the carriage rules are rounded and without any railing.
But how was he placed there?
That was the question which we had to answer. There is only one possible way. You were aware that the underground runs clear of tunnels at some point on the western end. I had a vague memory that while traveling on trains, I had occasionally seen windows just above my head. Now, suppose that a train halted under such a window. Would there be any difficulty in laying a body on the roof?
It seems most improbable.
We must fall back on the old axiom that when all other contingencies fail, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Especially as the leading international agent who has just left London lived in a row of houses which abutted upon the underground.
Oh, so that was your amusement over the map.
Yes, that was it. But the Hugo Oberstein of 13 Cawthorne Gardens had become my objective. Not only do his back windows open on the line, but more importantly, owing to an intersection at the next station, the underground trains are held motionless for some minutes at the very spot.
Splendid, huh? You've got it.
So far, Watson. I examined the house. Oberstein lived there with a single valet, probably a Confederate. He's gone now to the continent to dispose of his booty, but not with any idea of flight, for he cannot know we suspect him, or that we will make an illegal visit to his rooms tonight.
No, I don't like it, Holmes.
My dear fellow, it's not a time to stick a trifle. Think of what Mycroft said. We must go.
All right, we are bound to go.
I knew you would not shrink at the last. Come, Watson, but don't drop the instruments, I beg you. Your arrest as a suspicious character would be a most unfortunate complication.
A half hour later, we were inside Oberstein's headquarters in Caulfield Gardens, the fog still hanging about and shielding us. Holmes led the way to the back windows with the small light of his yellow lantern.
But tell me, Watson, the train tracks. Trains that paused under this very window. Hello, what's on the sill? Here, you can see where the rest of the body. And here's a blood mark. This place must be where the crime was done.
Undoubtedly, Holmes.
And yet they're certain to have left no incriminating evidence. The plans themselves must by this time be out of the country. What about all the papers? Yeah, that desk looks good clean. Anything in the wastebasket?
Nothing. Just some newspaper cuttings. That can't mean much.
Give them here. This is a find, Watson. A series of personal messages in the agony columns of the Daily Telegraph. No dates. The messages arrange themselves. This must be the first one. Terms agreed to. Write fully. Pierrot. Next comes too complex for description. Must have full report. Monday night after 9. Two taps. Only ourselves. Payment at hard cash when goods at hand. Pierrot.
What do you make of it?
It's only complete record, Watson. If only we could get the man at the other end. Perhaps it won't be too difficult after all. I think we might drive round to the offices of the Daily Telegraph and bring a good day's work to a good conclusion. Come in, Mycroft. You too, Inspector Lestrade. Have some breakfast.
No, thank you, Mr. Holmes. I've heard from your brother how you made an unofficial entry last night. We can't do these things in the force. No wonder you get results that are beyond us. But one day, though, you'll go too far.
For England, home, and duty, eh? Martyrs on the altar of our country. But what do you think of it, Mycroft?
Excellent, Sherlock. Excellent. But what is our next move?
Have you seen Pierrot's advertisement today?
What? Another one?
Here it is. Tonight, same hour, same place, two taps. Vitally important. Your own safety at stake, Pierrot.
By George, if he answers that, we've got him.
That was my idea when I put it in. I think if you could both make it convenient to come with us about 8 this evening to Caulfield Gardens, we might possibly get a little nearer to a solution.
O'clock, Mr. Holmes. You've been sitting in this big empty house for 3 hours now.
Yes, Sherlock. I'm afraid your trap has failed to snare the victim. I'm very chilled, and the fog outside is doing me little good. I really need my club in this weather and for the...
Quiet, Mycroft, quiet. I think I hear him. He's coming. Soon now. Soon. Open the door, Watson.
Yes.
Can I help you?
I thought Mr. Oberstein lived here. Wait a minute.
No, shut the door, Watson. Don't be in such a hurry to leave, Colonel.
You're Sherlock Holmes. Let me out of here.
Not so fast.
Who is there?
Let me present Colonel Valentine Walter, the younger brother of the late Sir James Walter, head of the submarine department.
You have no right to detain me. I'm here to see Mr. Oberstein.
Everything is known, Colonel. How an English gentleman could behave in such a manner is beyond my comprehension.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
Oh, come, Colonel.
We know that you made a copy of the keys your brother held, that you entered into a correspondence with Oberstein through the agony columns. We're aware that you went down to the office in the fog on Monday night, but that you were seen and followed by young Cadogan West, who had probably some previous reason to suspect you. Leaving all his private concerns, like a good citizen he was, he kept you to his heels until you reached this very house. Here he intervened, and here it was, Colonel, that to treason you added the more terrible crime of murder.
I did not. I did not. Before God, I swear I did not kill him.
Then tell us how Cadogan West met his end before you laid him on the roof of a railway carriage.
I swear to you that I didn't kill him. I did the rest. I confess it. It was just as you say. I had losses on the stock exchange, and I needed the money badly. Oberstein offered me $5,000. It was to save me from ruin, but as to murder, I'm innocent.
What happened then? Spare no detail.
The fog was so thick, I had no idea Cadogan West was following me until I was at the very door. Suddenly, he rushed up and demanded to know why I had taken the plans. Oberstein had a small club he always carried with him. He struck West on the head hard. The blow was a fatal one. West was dead in a minute. We were at our wits' end what to do. Then Oberstein had this idea about the trains, which halted under his back window. But first, he examined the papers I had brought. He said three were essential, and then he must keep them. I said no, there would be a dreadful row at Woolwich if they weren't returned. Oberstein said that three papers were so technical, there wasn't time to make copies. But by stuffing the other sheets in West's pockets, everyone would think he had taken them. I could see no other way out of it. Then we loaded the body on top of a passing train.
And your brother?
He said nothing, but he had caught me once with his keys. I think he suspected. I know he suspected. I do not know.
Did he give you no address?
He said that letters addressed to the Hotel de Louvre, Paris, would eventually reach him.
Then reparation is still within your grasp.
I will do anything. This man Oberstein has been my ruin and my downfall.
Here are paper and pen. Sit at the desk and write as I dictate. Dear sir, with regard to our transaction, you will no doubt have observed by now that one essential detail is missing. I have a tracing, which will make it complete. For this, I will need an extra £500. I would come abroad, but it would be suspicious if I left the country at present. So I shall expect you to be in the smoking room of the Charing Cross Hotel at noon next Saturday. I should be very surprised if that doesn't set your man.
History, that secret history of a nation which is so often more interesting than its public chronicles. But Oberstein rose to the lure and was safely engulfed for 15 years in a British prison. In his trunk, the submarine plans were found. Colonel Walker died in prison towards the end of the second year of his phonic music of Lassus, which has since been privately printed and is said by experts to be the last word on the subject. Some weeks afterwards, I learned by chance that my friend spent a day at Windsor Castle, whence he returned with a remarkably fine emerald tripen. When I asked him, he said it was a present from a certain gracious lady. I fancy I could guess at that lady's august name, and I have little doubt that the emerald pin will forever recall to my friend's memory the adventure of the Bruce Pottington plan.
From Baker Street with Love, by then Sherlock Holmes. Presented tonight by the Priory Scholars of Fordham, the Science Society of the Baker Street Irregulars. Robert Steelangle was Sherlock Holmes, Chris Steinbrenner was Dr. Watson, Jim Saunders was Inspector Lestrade, and Anne Le Carré was Mrs. Hudson. In The Adventure of the Second Stain, Peter Blau was Trelawney Hope, Bobby Gedalia was Lady Hilda Hope, Charles Kane was Lord Bellinger, the Prime Minister, and Vic Gedalia was Constable McPherson. In The Adventure of the Bruce Pottington Plan, Charles Foster King was Mycroft Holmes, Peter Blau was Colonel Valentine Walter, Evelyn Herzog was Violet Westbury, and Victor Dahlia was Sidney Johnson. Tonight's script was based on the definitive Sherlockian text, William Baring Gould's annotated Sherlock Holmes. Our prologue was not intended to bear any resemblance to Honor Majesty's Secret Service, a United Artists motion picture currently in release. Associate producer Peter Blau. This program was directed by Charles M. Collins, written and produced by Chris Steinbrenner for the Priory Scholars. The announcer is Don McCallion. Reminding you that surely it's about time you renew your acquaintance with Mr. Sherlock Holmes. This has been a presentation of the Priory Scholars and Fordham University Radio.